On this, the sixth episode of Dirt and Tie, the Gotham television series, Man of Steel 2 looks to cast a Wonder Woman, possibly, as well as Linda Carter's comments on it, Stephanie Brown is unbenched by DC, Star Wars Rebels, Star Trek Renegades, My Immortal looks for $3,000 for season 2, and somebody found some Doctor Who episodes. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Nerd and Tie, the only podcast on the internet with a dress code. I am one of your hosts, Professor Fur. With me, as always, are the fantastic Nick Izumi.
Till all are one.
And the amazing Trey Dorn.
I'm wearing pants.
And I'm happy to be back. I was gone for the last episode because for theatrical reasons, but we're back and we've got a lot to talk about this week.
What's theatrical reasons code for?
I was in the local theater company's production of Spamalot.
So that's what they're calling it now.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's yep. No, it was a lot of fun and I definitely missed it, but was it Brian, I think was his name? He did a good job, so.
Yeah, Archimize from over on my YouTube channel.
Well, right on, man. He did good. But don't ever try and replace me again, all right?
Well, show up next time and we won't have to. You know, you get two unexplained absences before we have to let you go.
Right. Okay. Well, I just unexplained. What do you mean? I just explained why I was gone.
Doesn't matter.
You fail me yet again, Professor.
If the policy's good enough for Best Buy, it's good enough for us.
Oh, we're off to a great start. But anyway, we've got a lot to talk about. Of course, I think our top story, we don't really have a top story, but the story that we put at the top.
The first story.
Our starting story is that Fox has won a bidding war for a Batman-based series that they're calling Gotham. They're going to probably be filming it for next year, or at least developing it starting next year. And it's going to have kind of a very Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. feel to it, kind of them playing catch-up. It's going to focus on a Batman-less Gotham, at least before Batman comes into existence. And follows James Gordon around before he takes up being the commissioner. Batman is not going to appear in the series, although the show will likely involve some well-known Batman villains.
Oh, dear.
I'm assuming that now we can't have certain villains without Batman. The Joker, for instance.
Well, but you can't have the Joker, but you can have the Red Hood, his original persona. Not to be confused with the current Red Hood in the comics, but... You know, it's the Joker had a career before he became the Joker.
The maitre d' with the dome on his head, Red Hood, not the biker Red Hood.
Right, right. And you could have Carmine Falcone. You could have the Penguin.
And actually, that's kind of what I think they're going to focus on mainly is I'd like to see a show about Gordon going after the mob families.
Well, you know, the Batman Year One, the comic book really is mostly Commissioner Gordon anyway.
Now my question is, are they going to fill the Gotham Police Department with new characters, or are we going to get to see Bullock, and are we going to get to see Renee Montoya? You know, are we going to get to see Maggie Sawyer? This is my question.
I like all of those characters, and I would like to see them on a screen, any type of screen, really.
Yeah, it's. I mean, there's a huge cast of cops who have been established in the Batman books, and I have this
Gotham's
fear.
Finest, for example, being a fantastic one.
Now, I have a fear that what they're going to do is come up with a bunch of new cops, because every time you involve a character who's pre-established in the comics, you have to pay the creator money for them. Mm. Like, and that's it's we're going to get a Tom Paris situation all over again, is what I'm afraid of, where you're going to get, you know, Bullock Light. Not to be confused with Bullock before he started eating donuts.
what they did in the actual 1989 Batman movie, where there was that character who was obviously Bullock, but they didn't call him that.
Was Bullock introduced by 89?
I could have sworn that,
because I know Montoya was created for the cartoon series, but I don't remember if Bullock, like, because Renee Montoya,
I want to say he existed around that before the movie came out.
Yeah, because Montoya transitioned from the cartoon to the comics because of her popularity, but I can't remember if Bullock predated, because it's, you know, I would have been, you know, like, what, 8, 9 when that movie came out, so.
I would have been born.
Yeah, I wasn't quite there yet, I don't think. When was 89 Batman released? What month?
I think it was a summer film.
Yeah, I wasn't
okay,
there
so
yet.
I was like 4 months old then.
Yeah, no, I was an October baby.
Two thumbs up I gave it. Only because I was just then understanding, you know, hand-eye control. But still,
But that's my fear, is we're going to get a bunch of analogs to the existing cast. Now, it wasn't a big deal with the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series because, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. is such a big organization. And honestly, there aren't enough, you know, prominent S.H.I.E.L.D. characters, where it got to the point where Coulson transitioned into the comic books because he was so popular.
And a lot of the prominent S.H.I.E.L.D. characters within the Marvel Cinematic Universe died in, like, probably several years ago since they were World War II people instead.
Yeah, because the Super Soldier Serum keeping them all young, and that's why pretty much, you know, all the characters, the supporting cast in the Captain America movie were all, you know, Nick Fury's group of soldiers, just without Nick Fury because he, you know, wasn't born yet in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So confusing.
The future.
Now,
if they draw from the Ed Brubaker comic series, that might be kind of cool. Speaking of Captain America, I'm a huge fan of Ed Brubaker, so everything he touches is gold, if you ask me. But
I think that was one of your big things, wasn't it? Yeah,
that was one of my big things. Was like
your love of Ed Brubaker about how he managed to bring Bucky back and not have it be awful.
Hey, speaking of Batman, it's fascinating looking at how Ed Brubaker brought a formerly dead character back, and it was one of the best story arcs of all of the Captain America stories, and you compare how they brought Jason Todd back, and it just makes you want to hit your head against him.
Jason Todd needed to stay dead. I am so angry that Jason Todd is alive. You know when the world is better? When Jason Todd is dead. If Jason Todd is not breathing, I am happy.
What's
Todd
weird
alive?
Is that he has a fan base now. I don't get it, because like
if you read
the old Jason Todd books, they're god awful.
They're horrible. Jason
Todd.
He was
the worst Robin ever.
America voted for Jason Todd to die, and he should have stayed dead. Clay Aiken doesn't get to be the American Idol. Reuben Studdard won that season.
Even
I don't care if everybody changed their minds later. He still doesn't get the award. Jason Todd deserves to be dead.
Superman book. Like, Jason Todd, he's like a minor incidental character, and he was still the worst part of that book. I swear to God. Ugh. Okay, Jason Todd, hate aside, though, can this show work?
Well, it will not be the first time that they've taken a crack at a Batman-less Gotham.
They could arrest a young Jason Todd.
Remembers 2002's Birds of Prey.
Last week, actually.
Birds of Prey, the pilot was actually pretty decent. And I forget the actress's name, but her portrayal as Oracle was I loved that.
Dina Meyer.
Yeah.
Dina
Meyer.
Yeah,
she was really good. I liked her. Everything else in that show was dreadful.
The show got weaker as it went on, and it didn't hold up. I will say, for when it came out, it was pretty amazing to see a superhero representation that good at the time. We have since raised our standards due to the phenomenal Marvel Cinematic Universe and, you know, everything that has come since. But at the time, that was actually a pretty impressive showing for a comic book-based TV series.
I'd love to do a comparison, like, between, like, looking at first seasons of comic book-based shows, between Smallville's first season, Birds of Prey's only season, and Arrow's first season.
What about Superboy? Come on, man. The live-action Superboy.
Oh, Superboy was a pretty cool show. It just got canceled because they didn't want more than one Superman TV show, and Lois and Clark won out.
Yeah, there are two different Superboys for Superboy because they recast the part between the first and second season.
That's also problematic. But, yeah. Well, maybe they picked the better show, but...
Lois and Clark, to be fair, the first season's pretty awesome.
I had fun with Lois and Clark. I've watched reruns recently. It's still dumb, but it's entertaining.
I just remember being a child and learning about Lois, you know, Lois and Clark being out around the same time that I was learning about Lewis and Clark and being really confused.
Your child brain could not take a pun.
No, it couldn't. Not at that age. It was like, wait a minute, hold on.
You know, since...
And then, hold on, it finally reached its peak. Like, the biggest laugh I've ever gotten from a robot chicken skit was based on that. They had Lois and Clark dressed up in frontier clothes. And they make one comment, and then Clark turns to the camera and says, "Do you really think was it really worth it just for this joke?"
Okay, well, speaking of Superman, we should probably move on to our next topic, Nick.
Yes.
Yeah, let's hit up talking about Man of Steel 2. I guess after, partly because of a lot of people, including, well, our cast, I guess, although I don't think they actually listen to us directly.
I think they do.
Of course they do, yes.
We influence Warner Brothers.
We influence them a lot, complaining about the lack of female superheroes, especially the fact that Wonder Woman keeps not getting the screen time she deserves. We've started hearing rumors about maybe including Wonder Woman in Man of Steel 2, Batman versus Superman, or whatever you want to call it. And Linda Carter from the original Wonder Woman TV show decided to chime in on it.
Well,
and
she's been cast in a role in Man of Steel 2.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the only reason why people ask her about it. Let's be clear. She didn't just, like, walk up to reporters and go, "Listen to me." No, they went to her because she's in the movie.
See, this is why I need to research things better. No, do we know who she's playing?
We don't know who she's playing. We know it's obviously not going to be Wonder Woman, or else people would be very confused.
Although the reason that people are speculating is because I believe that it was leaked that they're trying to cast a woman from the age of, like, 20 to 30 who's in good, strong physical condition. And people see that and they think, oh, there might be a Wonder Woman cameo.
It'd be a nice meta reference if she played Hippolyta. Like,
that would be excellent.
Like, that'd be really cool.
But of course, according to DC, it's just too hard. Meanwhile, amazing people like this, I don't know if you guys have seen it, but that Sam Balcom, who created that amazing 2-minute, 30-second Wonder Woman trailer.
I do want to talk about it for a second. Actually, the new head of the Warner Brothers, whose name is slipping my mind at the moment, did recently come out in the last couple of weeks and say that that they insist that there be either a Wonder Woman TV series or movie.
Yeah,
like
I read about.
There's nothing in development yet, but the new head of Warner Brothers is saying that they have to make a Wonder Woman project. So,
well, if there's one thing that the Marvel Cinematic hasn't done quite yet, it's having a main female superhero.
Yeah, I don't understand why they haven't made a Black Widow movie. I honestly boggles my mind why there isn't a Black Widow movie.
Agreed.
Black Widow is you know, it would be a brilliant spy thriller.
Yeah, you could do a really cool movie about, I mean, and... We and on top of that, with Scarlett Johansson in that part, she has the acting chops.
Well, and she's
like,
got the name
really
for the box
character.
Office. It's she's got the name that you can slap up on the movie poster and, you know, sell the tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Plus it's Scarlett Johansson, and I will see just about anything that she does because she's a fantastic actress.
It's true. And
yeah.
It's like, so why is it that it's so hard to get these female superheroes in movies? I would love to see Wonder Woman.
I would like a good legit reason from the film companies, because so far all they've been saying is it's just too difficult. But then, like I said, people keep putting out these fantastic short films and trailers, and it's like, no, how can this be difficult to make?
Okay, what the problem is that Hollywood has this idea of conventional wisdom of like of what will sell a film and what won't, and that's. The entire concept is bullshit, because we know for a fact that women make up about just under half of the movie going public for these superhero films. Women are going to go see these films right now, and it's every time a female led movie comes out, if it's a success, people talk about it's this special, like, isn't what a breakthrough that this finally happened. And when it fails, people go, oh, well, it's because women can't lead a movie, blah, 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 blah. But every film was meant to be, like, if it succeeds, it's a fluke. If it fails, it's just status quo. But really, they don't succeed or fail at any higher, at, like, any different rate than male-led movies. But because there are so many male-led movies, there are so many more good, like, successful examples. It's, it, it, it's they reinforce the concept on themselves. Now,
right.
Linda Carter with this whole Wonder Woman thing said what she'd like to see is a female writer take on the task of producing a Wonder Woman film. And she thinks that's why it's I think her idea that a male writer couldn't put themselves in the shoes of a female character and write a realistic script. I don't think she's right on that, but I do think it is probably more likely that a woman writer would be able to produce a good story.
See, I agree in that I disagree with her on the whole it would need a female writer. But what I liked of what she said is that in order to write Wonder Woman properly, you need to remember that she's a compassionate character and not to write her as a male superhero with boobs, because that's not what she is. She's
now, I'd like to see a female writer just because I want to see more female writers.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm fine with saying let's have a woman write Wonder Woman, because let's have a woman write everything.
Does your name have to start with G to write Wonder Woman well?
Could we, like, maybe, I don't know, petition Gail Simone to write a script? Like,
Gail Simone, that a thing Gail Simone has specifically said, when fans have asked her if she would, is that she has no idea how to write a movie script.
She could give it a shot. Anything she would do would be amazing. I would watch a Gail Simone written movie. Gail Simone, because I know you listen to our podcast.
Yes.
You love us. Write a movie. Write a movie for DC. Just show them that it's that can be done and can be fun and good.
Look,
so they can ditch this no fun attitude that they have.
Gail Simone just needs to keep writing excellent comics for me to read. Okay,
that's true too.
So good. The Movement is so good.
I still need to pick up The Movement.
Same here. Oh. It's been months since you told us to do that at WasabiCon, and I don't think either of us have done it yet.
Oh my God, you guys, read The Movement. It's my favorite comic to come out in the last, 20 years.
Sweet Jesus. Okay. Okay.
God, you're old.
That
Hey man, I got every issue of the Comet now. Every issue of the Impact Comics version of the Comet, which is written by Mark Waid, I want to point out. So this is good stuff, man.
That's exciting.
Yeah, no, it's and like you can pick up the issues of this thing for like less than a quarter, so it's harder to find the issues more than they cost any money. It's worth reading. Anyway, speaking of comic books,
I think
we're ready to move forward.
I believe so.
Those of us who pay attention to DC Comics were very saddened with the New 52 that a couple of characters were quote unquote benched. One of them was Stephanie Brown. All right. Stephanie Brown was originally introduced as Spoiler, then she became Robin for a short time, then she became Dead, and then she became Undead, and then she became Batgirl. And then
book was a huge hit, wasn't it? Her Batgirl book? The guys at the shops I go to said they had trouble keeping that one in stock.
It was critically acclaimed at the very least, and she only got about 24 issues, I think, before the New 52 mm-hmm. came in and reset it where she disappeared. Now, the editorial staff, whenever they would be asked about Stephanie Brown returning to the comics over the years, have been glib, they have been rude, they have been dismissive, and pretty much said that, the character is quote-unquote toxic. And it's now multiple people have pitched bringing it back. Gail Simone pitched bringing her back, I think, at one point. Brian Q. Miller was going to have her in the out of DC Comics continuity Smallville comic, which is the continuation of the Smallville series. He was going to have Stephanie Brown show up as Robin. And what happened was that even though it's out of continuity, when the comic was the art was already done, DC Comics made them change it to Barbara Gordon instead of Stephanie Brown, because that's how much they didn't want Stephanie Brown showing up in the comics.
Like, I didn't hear about this. I nearly just flipped my table.
Yeah. So it's like Grant Morrison's also pitched bringing her back. So amazingly, though, at New York Comic Con, DC announced that Stephanie Brown will be appearing as Spoiler in issue 3 of the new Batman Eternal series.
Yes.
And it's
okay.
Yeah. So, and this is really funny. So this is Scott Snyder is doing this book. And I don't know if you guys remember the story from a few years ago about the Batgirl of San Diego Comic-Con who kept challenging the publisher on its treatment of female characters.
Mm, I heard about.
Yeah, well, her name, she goes by the name online of Kyrex, but what happened was that Scott Snyder went up to her between panels and asked her specifically to make sure she asked about Stephanie Brown at the panel. No, I'm sorry. It wasn't Scott Snyder. It was John Cunningham, VP of marketing for DC, who approached her.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And he actually wanted her to interrupt the panel. And she apparently said that she couldn't do that. It would be so rude. And, like, his response was, no, I'll handle it. So it's, so Stephanie Brown will be back as Spoiler in DC Comics.
Welcome back, Steph.
Holy crap.
But I'm sure this is DC, so I'm sure they're going to find a way to screw it all to hell.
Well, but Scott Snyder's a good writer.
Scott Snyder's a good writer on Batman. His Swamp Thing, I'm the only person in the world who seems to hate his Swamp Thing run, but it wasn't my cup of tea.
I've never read his Swamp Man run. Swamp Man.
Swamp Man, I think, was the Asylum movie's knockoff of Swamp Thing.
Oh, God.
It did not get Wes Craven to direct it, by the way.
I've never been a big Swamp Thing guy, so I'm okay with that. I did watch the TV series.
I own that series. It's on my DVD shelf right now.
So, yeah, Stephanie Brown, back in action.
I'm glad she's back. I'm kind of glad she's Spoiler again. It would be nice for her to be able to be Batgirl again, but...
But, well, the problem is that the Gail Simone Batgirl is so successful. So it's, I don't need her to be Batgirl. I'm just glad she exists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more of my, like, you know, I don't care what she calls herself. You know, she could be, you know, the Brown Knight, for all I gave a crap, as long as it's Stephanie Brown. You know what I mean?
The only downside to this is that it puts a damper in the fan fiction Archimize and I were writing about forgotten DC characters teaming up. Because, like, it was going to be Stephanie Brown and Wally West leading a team. But
so make it Cass Kane and Wally West. Cass Kane is still benched, so.
Okay, well. Brian, if you're listening to this, we've got problems and we need to fix them.
Stop writing fan fiction. There's your problem.
Yeah, seriously, I think your first problem is writing fan fiction, Nick. All right, to be fair, show of hands.
I don't
want to
offend
fan
fiction. Everyone has written fan fiction.
Yeah.
Who is on this panel? I used to write fan fiction when I was much younger. There's nothing wrong with writing fan fiction.
Mine was a drunken second wrong. Doctor fic that will never see the light of day ever.
Mine is a comic that's up on DeviantArt and it's god awful.
I wrote some Ranma One Half fan fiction in the mid 90s.
Wait, really?
yes.
The image of.
And I wrote Transformers fanfic at one point for a while. Beast Machines Transformers fanfic, I want to point out.
No, Trey, it doesn't matter what you're going to say from this point on, because I'm imagining you writing Ranma One Half fanfic.
I showed my wife Ranma One Half for the first time ever the other day, because the first season's up on Hulu.
Can you bring this to Daishokan? We need to have a segment where we read this during the panel.
No, I don't have it anymore. I don't have it anymore.
Oh! Try and remember it and write it down.
No.
If you or anyone you know has a copy of Trey's Ranma One Half fanfiction, please send it to TRH on, what is it, contact?
The contact form at nerdandtie.trhonline.com. There's a link
for
contact on the
website. What if I wrote a male-male slash fic between Ranma and Ryoga and put Trey's name on it? Would that be acceptable?
That, oh my God, I hate you so much. Anyways, but so what I'm saying is there's nothing wrong with being a fanfic writer. It's It's just that Nick shouldn't be one. Let's be clear. I'm not criticizing people for writing fan fiction. I'm criticizing Nick.
Well, yeah, because I'm a terrible writer. That's just a fact.
I have no idea.
I've never
read your writing, Nick. I've watched your reviews, but never read your writing.
Oh, you've actually watched my reviews now. That's a step forward.
Well, I watched your Valgrave one.
Oh, Jesus, I'm sorry. I'll ask her.
Suddenly, this pause just got awkward.
That was the most
awkward.
Depressing thing I've ever worked on. We should move forward.
So, yes, Nick, let's move forward.
Okay. Hey, I think we're starting up with a lot of STRs now.
Yeah, it seems that way.
The first one is one that I find hilarious, and maybe some of you are probably going to be angry at me for that. But so there's a project coming about right now called Star Trek Renegades.
And you switched the order on
being
us.
What was that?
Yeah, you switched the order on us. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Keep going.
Whatever.
Just go with it.
Go with it.
I have the notes in front of that one for me, so that's what we're doing. And this little thing was headed by good old Walter Koenig and Tim Russ from the original Star Trek and Voyager, respectively. And they're working under the assumption that because Star Trek has not had a TV show in so long that they need to fix that, I guess. And so they're basically putting together a Star Trek fan film.
Yeah, not the first time.
No, and it's been done multiple times.
Well,
in fact,
it's not even the first time Tim Russ has done it.
Mm-hmm.
So Star Trek Renegades, the premise, I think, is an interesting idea. That it's a darker Star Trek with a heavier focus on the intelligence communities, and it's the Federation in a much worse position than it's been. And I think the premise is not terrible. And the whole thing is that they did a Kickstarter, and they're doing it with effectively television-level production budgets, you know, unlike most fan films. But here's the problem. It's so linked in to pre-existing characters. The very fact that Walter Koenig is playing he's got to be like 150-year-old Chekhov.
Yeah.
Whoa, he's playing Chekhov in this.
He's playing Admiral Chekhov.
Yeah. Yeah, he's playing, and it's just such...
Who let him be Admiral?
Now, Chekhov's just good for macking on ladies and screaming.
Who's that?
Ever see The Apple? It's a really weird episode. Chekhov spends the whole time trying to get laid. But people are dying, and he's more like trying
let
to hit on the
your
ensign.
Nuclear vessel.
But okay, so I love Walter Koenig, and I think he's a great actor, and I loved him in he's like one of the highlights of Babylon 5. He was
one of my favorite voice actors in that episode of Futurama that they did with Star Trek, like where he mentioned he has his own friends and his own set of keys.
But here's the thing is that it strains credulity for the franchise, and I don't think there's any way. There is no way that Paramount looks at this project with all of its like seemingly like the fanish referential stuff and doesn't pass. And it's like I think that if they had wanted to do a serious pitch for a pilot, Tuvok I can understand because, you know, him as head of Section 31 strains credulity to me, but like I could get that, you know, I could get including one or two characters from the pre-existing show, but to link it back to Koenig and to do like for that kind of like it just feels like here's Walter Koenig, not like I think original characters.
As soon as I saw him wanting to play Chekhov, the first thing that went through my mind is, wow, Walter, how bad do you need a paycheck right now? Like, do you just are you just not feeling like you're famous enough?
I don't think either of those are that. I think when it comes to a lot of these guys, like especially with like the earlier fan film they did, there is a genuine love of the franchise that's coming from these guys, and they want to play their characters as many times as possible.
And who can blame
them? Love their
really?
Characters.
Yeah,
and
I don't blame that.
But I'm thinking. But my thought is that if you want a serious attempt at a series, you know, it's you don't fill it with, you create new interesting characters that are unique to the new franchise. You don't, because like the instant you throw in Chekhov, suddenly the weight is drawn over there and you cloud focus. It stops being about your new story and starts being about cameos. And at that point, you lose the plot.
And the cameos that they have, I mean, it's all like the secondary characters, and that's not to knock, like, that Star Trek's always been an ensemble show, but it also kind of, I think that you're going to have an audience that's like, oh, well, why couldn't they get, you know, Janeway or, you know,
well, I'll tell you why, because Kate Mulgrew is like starring on real projects with budgets,
right?
Like,
well, I mean, I know the
Black.
Real reason, but within continuity reasons, it's like, oh, well, that's.
Well, you know, here's the thing. An Admiral Janeway in charge of intelligence makes more sense. We know that she's in the Admiralty because of Star Trek Nemesis.
It's been established that she's there. Now, my question, is this another project that Vic Mignogna is involved in?
Is involved in this.
Oh,
wait. Vic Mignogna is involved in Renegades?
Yes, he is playing Garrus.
Wait, no, that's him under that makeup?
I guess so.
I've seen the photos of the Cardassian, like the Cardassian makeup on the Garrus character. I had no idea that was Vic Mignogna underneath that.
Everybody's
that is Vic Mignogna.
Favorite convention guest.
Oh my god.
Vic Mignogna.
It's like telling me Troy Harrington's in this thing.
Vic Mignogna actually does have quite the background with Star Trek.
He does. He has he actually, and it's really funny, in the Banbury place here in Eau Claire, there's in the community television office, there's a poster for one of his first fan films that he made involving Star Trek.
Which mm-hmm. one?
I have no idea what it's
Star
called,
Trek
but I
Farragut.
Laugh every I laugh
oh,
every
he
time.
Oh, he was in Farragut?
Farragut.
Yeah, Farragut.
Series. He's working on that.
I didn't know he was in that.
He's the director.
Yeah, he's like one of the guys in charge of it. I
wow.
did a bit of
I
a triple. I don't know if you could call it a double take, but I was listening to NPR back when Into Darkness hit theaters. And they were interviewing the people who worked on Farragut, and then Edward Elric starts talking. I'm like, what the hell?
I guess I never watched the dub of any of the Full Metal Alchemist stuff, so I don't know what they sound like.
On a side note, pretty good dub.
Oh no, yeah. I've heard parts of the dub, and the dub was fine. I just watched it subtitled. So I didn't,
Back in the day, I know.
It's more of a, I wasn't aware of what it sounded like, and not because I thought it was bad, but just because I might have watched that entire series fan sub before the first episode came out in the U.S.
Vic Mignogna now involved in this project as well, I guess.
Robert Picardo's in it, though.
I like
him.
He's
a nice guy.
He's really cool.
It's been a long time since I, was in the same room as Robert Picardo, but he's a nice guy. When I remember.
My favorite part of Voyager, really.
Well, he's the reason why the fifth season of Stargate Atlantis is awesome.
Oh, he was in that?
I still haven't seen that.
Yeah, he's fifth season, he takes over as mission commander.
Oh, right on.
Because he's got a recurring character all throughout Stargate SG-1 and Atlantis. So his character Woolsey shows up a bunch of times before he, and then he becomes a regular season 5.
Right.
No, it's good stuff.
Oh, cool. Now, I might have to give it at least a look at that.
I want to be excited about Renegades, but it's
now
just...
I don't. Just so it doesn't sound like you're completely trashing Renegades, I will say the costume work from what I've seen actually looks really good.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is I'm worried about is the visual direction, because I've seen an earlier fan film that Tim Russ was involved in, and I think he actually directed, and the camera angles were just awful. There's a lot of stuff of tight close-ups around people's faces and not enough establishing. It's just the cinematography wasn't good, and so I have this fear that they're gonna spend a bunch of money making Renegades and it's not even gonna look like a good Star Trek fan film.
I need to hide this section of the podcast from my fiance, because when I mentioned that we were going to be talking about Star Trek Renegades, she went into this huge list of what she's excited about and sent me a lot of really all caps texts explaining how excited she was for this. So we're just going to hide this part.
No, let her hear it.
there are ways that it could work. Like the thing is,
I'm sure she'll unfollow me on Tumblr. It's fine.
The thing that I like about that I'll give Farragut credit for, and what I'll give Star Trek Phase, I think it was Phase 2, is another independently produced web series, was that they decided to go with the original series for their like setting, and because of that, it was much easier to copy that visual aesthetic.
Yeah.
And the show works really well that way. And doing one of the more modern shows, I'm wondering how well they can do that on the limited budget.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess their fundraising's been going pretty well for them.
Of course
so.
It has. But you know what it is? You get a bunch of people. Now, I do think we need a new Star Trek series. And actually, Brian Fuller has said that he has like a really good idea.
I would love a Brian Fuller Star Trek series.
Brian Fuller is interested in pitching a Star Trek series, which is kind of cool.
But I worship the ground that man walks on.
But all we know is a comment he said in general. So Lord knows if that's ever going to, you know, advance beyond a passing thought in his head.
It would be really quirky and morbid, and one of the characters would have the power to talk to dead people.
Hey, to be fair, it might just be inanimate objects. Wonder Falls is great, by the way.
I love Wonder Falls. I love every show that he's done. Yeah. Every single thing that Brian Fuller has done
Star
has been
Trek
great.
Would be really cool. I don't. I think the biggest brand recognition thing now is just trying to keep people not confused with the newly splintered timeline. Because, yeah. I mean, we're comic book fans. We're used to splintered timelines. Is the general public used to it? Now yeah. I feel bad because I'm really underestimating how smart people are, and I get down on media for that all the time. But
well, I think the only thing that you'd do that would save it if they did a new Next Generation era series or post-Next Generation era series in theory is that it's set in a different time frame. So people just might not understand that the new movies are taking place in a different universe. They might think they're still in the same reality. But I think that time frame difference is what would save the parts of the audience that wouldn't get that.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that working.
Yeah.
I hate saying that because I don't want to seem like I think people are stupid because I really don't usually, but...
Mostly, I'd rather see a Next Generation era series than an original series set... like a new movie era set series, because the new movie like breaks so many, like it's yeah. easy to get away with like doing some weird like world breaking plot device in a film. Like you right. can transport across a, you know, half a sector of space without problem in a film. But once you give that technology to the week to week characters, suddenly no one needs a starship anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, that's just so I'd rather see a Next Generation like era. I keep calling it Next Generation era, but really it would be post Next Gen, because anything that takes place now would be a good 20 years after the Next Generation,
right?
Or ended even, like a decade after Voyager.
Maybe that could be even a good thing, because like Next Gen, DS9, and Voyager were so close together in the time stream, maybe giving us another skip forward so we're not held down by all those familiar characters and they can do something more freely. That would be good. Like what Gundam tried doing in the early 90s. Like, just skip forward so you don't have to deal with all the old cast anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that. It's, you know, I think that I think jumping ahead, you know, by a decade or two would be good.
Mm-hmm.
Or even a century, like they did with Next Generation.
Yeah. I mean, that was pretty cool. I think everyone loves Next Generation.
Well, the advantage is if you skip ahead a century, you can do anything with the politics, you know?
Right.
If you have the same geography to deal with, you know, you still have to deal with the fact of, you know, where the Cardassians are in relation to the Romulans and keep track of that stuff. But you're no longer beholden to the continuity of, you know, like, oh, it's the same, you know... Why isn't, you know, Martok in charge of the Klingon Empire anymore? Oh, spoilers for Deep Space Nine. Anyways.
A whole bunch of people just punched their computers, Trey. Thanks.
I'm sorry. It's been over a decade since season 7. If you don't want spoilers, it's all up on Netflix and Hulu. Go watch it now. I think it's even on Amazon. Okay, if you can watch it for free on Amazon, if you have Amazon Prime, I don't care about spoilers.
Watch Star Trek, damn it.
For God's sakes, man.
Indeed.
Okay, well, I think we've said what we could about this. We're going to move on to the other STR on the list. We've got a new Star Wars animated series coming out very soon. Star Wars Rebels.
And boy, did they tease us with that trailer.
A whole Star Destroyer moving by the camera. That's it. What a great trailer, guys.
Yeah, the trailer, just a Star Destroyer flying across the screen. It's like something we've never seen. Oh, wait, that was the opening.
Yeah, but it's Disney flexing their muscle, being like, oh, yeah, we own this now.
But technically, that means there aren't any rebels in the trailer for Rebels.
No, but it's setting up what the rebels are rebelling against. Come on, it takes place 14 years after...
It's not called Star Wars Empire.
14 years after the... events of Revenge of the Sith, or whatever the hell the third movie was called. As far as I'm concerned, it didn't exist. I'm one of those people.
Episode three was just bad.
It was, but...
Okay, episode two, the last half hour, really entertaining. And all of episode two is great if you just ignore the love story between Anakin and Padme. All the other scenes are great.
I agree with that.
And that's why I had really high hopes for episode three, because episode one was episode two was there's some really awesome stuff in here. Some stuff that's really not good, but episode three should be worse. Great.
Well, the thing about episode three is that Star Wars has always been that sci-fi series that you can watch with everyone in the family. So let me tell you, I mean, I don't have any young I have a young nephew now, and let me tell you, all that excitement about watching Star Wars for the first time with a young nephew is always dampened by the idea that one of the pivotal chapters in it has a man getting mutilated and burned while still alive. That's really
show him the prequels.
Awesome.
Well, there's also
a responsible parent doesn't show the kids the prequels.
No kidding.
Well, I mean, you could show them. Like, there's that one order that you show the films in, like it's episode 4 or 5, and then you do 1, 2.
No, you disregard the first one. Yeah, it's episodes 4, 5, disregard episode 1, 2, 3, then 6. And
that's right. We should do that sometime.
Episode 1 doesn't accomplish anything at
Nick,
all.
Nick, what are we doing during winter break? We should do that some night.
Winter break?
I don't have a winter break.
Well, what are we doing
those of us who work in real jobs.
December to the almost end of January.
Working? Going to work.
I mean, me too, but...
Probably processing appeals for...
I would be up for... If I can work out some time, I would totally rewatch the Star Wars films.
Let's do that. I think we should.
Star Wars... But the thing about Rebels that has me excited is some of the stuff that they've talked about. Like, they want to use... For the ship designs, they're basing them on the original, like, paintings for the storyboards of the original movies, like the concept paintings.
Well, that would be interesting, because that is close enough to the show, to the ships that then show up later, that it would feel like an evolution into them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, that would be the prototype. And today they actually just released their first new character design for the show.
Oh.
And he's a doofy-looking dude called the Grand Inquisitor. And he's got a double-bladed lightsaber.
Does he do a big musical number about the Inquisition?
Is his real name Gary? Gary Stu? My hero has got a triple-bladed lightsaber, and all the women find him attractive.
You need to find this picture. Like, he's one of those guys from episode 3 that Obi-Wan runs into while he's riding the lizard. When they're like, General Grievous, totally on this planet. I don't know what that species is called. I'm sorry, Star Wars fans. I just don't care what this species is called. But he's one of those guys. And he's got not only does he have a double-bladed lightsaber, but there's like a ring around the handle or something. It just looks ridiculous.
And it has the +20 against ogres.
He can use his force power to basically change anybody's mind to do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I was really hoping, when I heard the whole Star Wars Rebels concept, that's the one thing that's bumming me out, is that the first character we're introduced to is a lightsaber guy, and I was kind of hoping for
Wait, why is a non-Jedi using a lightsaber?
General Grievous did it.
I don't know.
Like, he was an asthmatic robot.
Yeah, I know. I don't understand. Like, because the weirder, whole point is that it's a weird weapon for a normal person to use.
Even weirder, apparently the Grand Inquisitor's job is to track down and kill any Jedi who are left over, and at this point, that should be like Yoda and Obi-Wan. I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, in theory,
clearly he didn't do his job that well. We have a whole three movies showing that he didn't do his job.
Failed. The Grand Inquisitor succeed.
And I like how we talked about all this comic book stuff, and now we're breaking out the stereotypical nerd voices when talking about Star Wars. We're terrible.
I'm sorry, but sometimes when it comes to dealing with Star Wars fans, I don't know where to go because I.
No, you know what? I don't break out the nerd voice for any particular fandom. I break out the nerd voice for bad writing.
I like that. I get behind that.
Because you can't really get nerdier than my actual self. You know, I've spent my life collecting comics. I know every Starship class off the top of my head. I played D&D before one of you was born. We're talking like I am hardcore Mr. Nerd. Like, I worked at Gen Con while TSR was running it. I get to do the nerd voice whenever the hell I want.
I don't think I have that, even half that cred.
I played the D6-based Star Wars RPG.
I don't have that kind of cred. Star Wars is just something that I both love, but I also cannot get into the expanded universe to save my life.
He's secretly descended from the Mandalorians. And
yeah, probably.
And
we're going to get hate mail from the one listener to our show that I can listen. Alhan, if
Jango
you're listening.
Fett, I'm about to say, Alhan's going to just send us hate mail now.
He's Jango Fett's father, and his mother was a droid. I don't... A quarter Wookiee droid, actually.
And the Force? Why, that's just tiny little bacteria in your bloodstream called midichlorians.
He was born on Wookiee Life Day.
Seriously, I'm just going to leave.
He was born on Life Day, which is why he's the savior of the Wookiees.
I need to talk to my work. I need to get Life Day off. It's a holiday for my people.
But he used to be a poker buddy with this guy, Scratchy, who you might know as Chewbacca's father, or was he the grandfather? I don't remember. And at one point, he does punch Lumpy in the head.
And watches weird Wookiee porn.
Lumpy deserves.
It's not even Wookiee porn. It's like a regular human porn. That's what I don't understand about that scene, is Scratchy's getting aroused looking at human beings, which makes me, you know...
Hey,
really,
you know how some people are? You know how some people are furries? Maybe it's like a reverse thing for Wookiees. I don't know.
Okay, if we're gonna bring up that, I know that she's dead, but I want B. Arthur's character to come back.
It's animated. They could do it. Who does an impression?
We need her in Star Wars again. In fact, even better if we can just have her and like the surviving cast of the Golden Girls. So, then I will watch that show every week. Betty White hanging out with Greedo. It'll be the best.
Also, he trained Greedo.
Oh.
Who are we even talking about anymore?
The Inquisitor.
He trained him to have a bar fight. That's awesome. Okay, this is gone.
All right.
Way off the rails.
Let's reel it back in.
There were rails? I didn't know there were rails. Also, in another universe, he fathered Fox McCloud.
Oh, move on.
Okay. Speaking of Mary Sue's.
Yeah, oh wow, good transition.
Wow, that was a fantastic transition.
Thank you. The wonderful My Immortal web series has launched a Kickstarter for season 2. Now, we talked about My Immortal way back in the first episode.
When it was just starting or hadn't started?
A couple episodes that aired. I think the first three or four episodes.
It was just after Snap and Lupin was released.
Yeah, it was halfway into the series. Because they had a 6-episode first season, and that was after episode 3 that we recorded.
Probably the funniest episode of the...
For those of you who don't feel like going back and listening to that first episode, because by God, the show's much better now than it used to be. You know, a whole 6 episodes late, you know. But My Immortal is based off of the infamous My Immortal fanfic.
Loosely.
Very loosely.
Thankfully.
Which is the quintessential Mary Sue fanfic for Harry Potter, and kind of has legendary status. It's a Harry Potter fanfic so famous even I had heard of it, and I couldn't tell you another one, except for this really awkward one I accidentally read once, and I don't even want to go into it. And I'm just saying, there's a reason why I never messaged that person on OkCupid. Weird shit, man. Anyways, anywho.
Where were we going with this?
My Immortal is a web series. It's loosely based off the fanfic, where pretty much what they did is they took the Mary Sue character, and rather than have all the other characters act completely out of character, had them act mostly like themselves and react to this Mary Sue, with the exception of the wonderful Harry Draco romance, which I don't ship. I don't ship Harry and Draco in the regular Harry Potter, but I sure do ship Harry Draco and My Immortal.
It was a surprisingly tasteful romance scene, actually.
I know. Well, it helps also that the guy who plays Draco, I think his first name is Eli, is just hilarious. But anyway, so they did a 6-episode first season on practically no budget, and so what they did was they're doing a Kickstarter for season 2, with a modest goal of only $3,000. And they just, $3,000 Canadian.
So that's
like $3,001. Yeah, like $5 difference or something. But, the Kickstarter's going on now. It's still got 26 days to go. So you should back it. They're currently at, $1,692 when I say this on, today, October 13th, Sunday. I am proud to say I was the first backer.
Nice.
I was the first backer of this, so
I'll probably kick in a couple bucks.
My whole $10 that I put towards it.
I would be willing to contribute to this.
I think it's really important that people contribute to this, first off, because these guys are pretty funny. Season 2 is going to follow the characters as they attempt to create a band.
Oh, thank God.
As suggested, as the season 1 ends with Hermione and NAB talking about starting a band. And so that's at least what the proposed plot of season 2 is going to be. I want to say it's really important people back it, because even though it's raised over half their goal, $1,000 of that all came from one backer. So, like, it's going to rise much slower as time goes on here. So it's contribute.
They're good things to back. I don't know. I really feel like part of fandom is giving back to your community. And
yeah, these guys have a really good sense of humor. I'll say, you know, in the first season, some of the acting wasn't awesome from some of the characters, but the main core cast of, you know, the Harry, Hermione, Ron, Draco and NAB, like those characters were really well cast and really well acted.
Except for the one episode that Snap and Lupin in, when they just completely outshined everybody.
That's true. And well, one of those two, the actor who played Lupin is the creator and writer of the series. So Brian McClellan. So he does a reading of portions of the original My Immortal fanfic on YouTube, and it's worth watching. It is annoyingly shot vertically on a cell phone, which was really hilarious when I popped it up on my TV earlier today. This little strip in the center on my widescreen TV is where the whole video is taking place. But it's you should back the My Immortal project, because stuff.
It's good and it's funny, and we need more good and funny things in this world.
And
I will say, though, for the fact that they had a limited budget, the magic fights were surprisingly well choreographed and well...
I disagree entirely, but...
Really?
I also disagree entirely on
okay.
that one.
I loved the show.
For finding out that they had no budget, I mean, like, it was relatively well done.
It's okay, so I love the series a lot. I will say the magic fights are the weakest part because everybody keeps jumping every time they use their wand.
You wouldn't?
Well,
shut
no,
up. You know,
because
you had a magic
wanna...
wand. I would be jumping up and down as I was firing.
Okay,
well,
imagine you were watching a gunfight and every time someone shot their gun, they jumped up and down in the air.
To counterpoint that, I have a friend who used to work at that guy with the glasses who had a show called the Reviewniverse Saga. And in that, he played a Kamen Rider-esque character who was a movie reviewer. And the fight scenes in his show were fantastically choreographed. And from what I understand, he didn't have a very good budget to work with either. But, he was a film student, but still.
Yeah, it's the My Immortal guys. Well, I think the guy who is producing it is also a film student. But here's the thing. The My Immortal web series, the strength is not in the battles. It's, you know, the battles exist for plot purpose.
I enjoyed them.
The strength of the series comes from the character scenes. And, you know, or when... I love Draco's interviews in episode 5.
That was a really cool thing. It gave it a whole different feel to the show, I thought, was suddenly
Yeah, they do the interviews for all the characters, but the ones Draco did were apparently completely improv'd.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And they have on their YouTube channel the complete unedited, like, stream of consciousness he did for that scene, and it includes...
I need to look at that.
You know, I will say the funniest bits are what ended up in the episode, so, you know, I don't know how worth watching the original stream of consciousness is, but, like, the stuff he came up with was just hilarious. I'm not going to bother, like, I could reenact and quote it, but it would lose the effect, so just... Right. Go watch episode 5. Yeah, and go watch all of it. Watch episode 3 especially for the Snap and Lupin episode. That's phenomenal. Because really both the actor who plays Snap and the guy who plays Lupin are just phenomenal. But like the My Immortal Hermione Granger is my favorite Hermione Granger.
I agree.
It's nothing wrong with the canon film, you know, Hermione, but I like the alternate universe Canadian Hermione.
Alternate universe Canadian Hermione new band name.
really, because My Immortal is like an alternate universe version of the Harry Potter series where everyone's Canadian.
As most alternate universes are, actually.
If Hogwarts was in Canada. Nope. You there still, Nick?
I bugged out for a bit. I'm back.
Hey,
all right, awesome
back.
Sauce. We can pretend that Nick was here the whole time.
I totally was.
Yeah, he heard everything.
He's wearing pants, even.
Yeah, he's right here next to me, actually. He transported to Eau Claire, and he's standing right here.
Wish I could transport to Eau Claire.
Right?
Then I could punch you. And then go home.
Don't transport to Janesville. Oh, God.
Why would I want to do that?
Why would anyone want to go here?
A bug just flew in my mouth as I was biting down on ice. Ah!
It's okay. We all heard you biting down on ice, and so did everyone at home.
I needed more ice to get that out of my mouth. Gross. Oh.
So anyways...
Let's move on.
So you should watch. If you haven't watched the My Immortal web series, watch it. If you haven't contributed to their Kickstarter, do so. Even if you can only throw in $5, every dollar counts. And you know, let's help them make their goal a great independent fan project. And you'd go spend $10 to see a movie. Why not help spend $10 to make something that will be awesome that you can then watch a lot over and over and over again, and then make your wife watch, and then. She'll tell you that, I don't like this episode as much, and I'll say, shut up, you'll love it. And then she'll say, I don't like that tone. And then you'll say, I'm sorry, honey. And then I'll sleep on the couch.
Wow, that seemed kind of autobiographical.
She genuinely liked the series, so it's in truth. But, you know.
All right. Finally tonight, of course, some big news that came out over the last 2 weeks. Initially, I believe it was the Guardian, and I could be wrong on that, reported that a bunch of lost Doctor Who episodes had been found in an Ethiopian television station. Of course, more news sites picked that up as the story kind of took on, and turns out it was true. The BBC announced on Friday, October 11th, or it was on the Thursday, my mistake, on the Thursday, no, again, my mistake, it was on the Tuesday, I can do this, announced on the Tuesday that a bunch of episodes had in fact been recovered. In a Nigerian news station, not the Ethiopian station.
It's only nine episodes.
Nine episodes. However, it does complete several serials that were thought to have been unfinishable, or at least visually speaking. They had used a lot of production stills, and the audio is still intact to at least let people hear what they were supposed to sound like. One of the episodes recovered was... most of the episodes that finish off of the Patrick Troughton serial Web of Fear, which is, of course, the introduction of Colonel Lethbridge Stewart.
Yay.
Yeah. Hooray. And a lot of people are probably wondering, how on earth can we see this? Well, shortly after the announcement, and I believe it was just the other day, it is now available on iTunes.
That is correct. Okay.
Firstly, holy crap, BBC actually releasing something like that quickly?
Yeah, that makes me wonder if they've had it for a lot longer than they thought.
It probably means that they were less damaged than a lot of the other stuff.
It's true, but I mean, like, with all these other things that they've recovered, they usually take so long to put them out, and then...
Well, I think it's because they want to put out as much stuff as they can in the 50th anniversary year.
That's true.
And I think that, I mean, you've got the 50th anniversary special next month.
Right.
That I think that there was a want to get these out there. And since the news was hot on the episodes already, and if they had them pretty much at broadcast quality, why not put them out immediately, especially if you're doing it digitally?
Part two of my comments, I do need to say that I'm eating crow big time on this one. Because... the Doctor Who fandom, for as long as I've been alive, has been saying, oh, yeah, they found these missing episodes in X corner of the world, and they're totally going to recover all the missing episodes. And from what I've been told, when Tomb of the Cybermen was recovered, that was when it got to its highest point. But when I first heard this news, I'm like, sure, they did.
Well, you know what? The initial reports that came out about, like, the episodes recovered in Ethiopia...
was like 100-and-something episodes.
That I still don't believe. Like, you tell me recovered 9 episodes, I'm like, I buy that.
Yeah, if they would have said the actual number from the beginning, I would have believed it. But
yeah,
when they were like...
So you were right to be
hundreds
skeptical.
Of missing episodes.
Yeah, no, the hundreds of missing episodes story is not true. But 9 missing episodes recovered is totally true.
Including the Web of Fear, which honestly, it's the sequel to the Abominable Snowmen, which is one of the greatest second Doctor.
But we have a Yeti story complete now. That's fantastic.
Well, not quite. Only episode. We do not have episode 3 of the serial. However, there is enough. They have the audio and they have a whole bunch of production stills, so you can purchase them. But you just get all that for episode 3, where it should be.
You know, I'm okay with that, and even with some of what they're doing right now, like the moon base and the ice warriors got released with the missing episodes animated.
Yes,
and that's pretty cool. And if they do that with this, I'll be fine with it. I just having a Yeti story that I can actually watch all the way through. That's really exciting.
Hear, hear.
Yeah, if I like Troughton more, I'd be more excited. But you know.
Oh, don't even start with me, Trey.
They have all the episodes of My Favorite Doctor, so it's okay.
Who is your favorite Doctor, Trey?
Tom Baker.
Yeah. Okay.
I've been a Tom Baker fan since I was a small child, watching
Fair
him
enough.
On TV 11 in Chicago on my local PBS. I love me some Tom Baker. I feel safe saying I'm a Tom Baker fan again. Like, for a really long time, like, I always felt like people would think I was some hanger-on for saying I like Tom Baker the best. Because, you know, he was there for 7 years, and he was the most common image associated with the Doctor before the new series.
Well, you know, plus, it is the first that Americans saw.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, except, I mean, some of the PBSs, like the Chicago PBS went back and showed, like, whatever they had. Actually, I know my parents started watching it back with, like, Hartnell episodes, I thought. I really think the some of the PBSs started earlier, but it could just be that they went back once they got them. You know what I mean?
I've heard about them going back. I think
they just went back because I remember watching Pertwee episodes long after I had watched Tom Baker episodes. But I just wanted to hear
the thing was that we always got backlogged. The one time we got an episode for England was $5.
Yeah,
obviously I wasn't there for that.
But like, you know, it's funny because like for years I felt ashamed to admit that Tom Baker was my favorite doctor because you got to feel like you're just sounding like some like you, that's not the cool doctor to say you like because everybody likes Tom Baker. But now right. there've been like, you know, now we've had 9, 10, and 11, and soon to be 12. I'm like, and 8, if you go back. You know, McGann was my fallback, because I would say I'd like McGann if I wanted to sound cool.
8 was my first doctor.
Yeah, McGann was who I would fall back to if I wanted to sound edgy, because, I mean, I like Davison, I like McCoy, nobody likes Colin Baker. Anyone who... Colin Baker doesn't like Colin Baker.
Two people would vehemently disagree with you and take you to task over that.
Well, Colin Baker will tell you his tenure as the doctor wasn't good, so I respect him more than I respect their opinion on Colin Baker. but now that like everyone's all about like, you know, 10 and 11, I feel fine. Like, I guess there's a little bit of hipster in me. Like, I was into the series before you were. I have such a like subtle blend of hipsterism mixed into me, and I really should stop it, and because I get mad at other people who judge fans of New who have never watched the original series, because at this point you shouldn't have to, because for God's sakes, man, 7 seasons of a show, if you've watched 7 seasons of the show, no one can question your fanhood.
I'd say New Who is now practically, it's longer than a lot of shows will be in their entire run, so.
Right, so that's why I'm like, I will never criticize a fan of Doctor who has never watched the original series. I'll say they might want to check it out, maybe select episodes or stuff that's skippable. But
oh yeah, know, I would never tell any New Who fan to go back and watch all the classic episodes available.
I might say they might enjoy some of like the Tom Baker Sarah Jane episodes.
If you don't like Tom Baker Sarah Jane episodes, I don't want to be your friend.
But like, you know, it's because you get great moments like the Pyramids of Mars, where they walk into the room. Both heel turn and walk out of it when they see the robot. Like, it's, you can't, like, it is one of the greatest moments in Doctor Who, is that turnaround. It's, like, yes, the effects are cheesy, but, you know, it's, Tom Baker's hilarious.
For what it's worth, Trey, I know your hipster feelings, though, because, but I guess more specifically with favorite Tom Baker story, mine is Genesis of the Daleks, and I'm always like, everyone's going to be like, that's, what a poser. His favorite story is everyone's favorite Tom Baker story.
So I really like Pyramids of Mars. That's
a really good one.
And the voice of the demonic alien in that?
Yeah, Sutek. Wasn't he the demon in series two?
He was also the voice of, yeah, the devil in that David Tennant episode, yeah.
That's cool.
So he played the devil twice. Because both claimed to be the devil.
Yeah, if you got a good gig going for you, yeah, claiming to be the devil, you know.
I'm just saying. But so, yeah, no, it's, oh, man, it, like, yeah, Doctor Who is awesome, and I don't care who your favorite doctor is. If you like the show, you like the show. I don't care when you started, you know. Peter Capaldi's going to be someone's first doctor.
That's exciting. That's, for me, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm excited to see what they do with Peter Capaldi, but I'm looking forward to going back to these old ones. I'm looking forward to watching Web of Fear, and I'm honestly really looking forward to watching the first regeneration story, because now that 10th Planet got restored.
Oh, that's right. 10th Planet was the other one.
Yeah, it's well, I don't know if they they might have found that episode. I know the DVD is coming out with the animated part 4 on it. So
yeah, that's separate. It was a different serial that they found in the 9 episodes, I thought.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I think they were both Second Doctor stories, weren't they?
Yeah, they were both Troughton stories.
Yep.
Because Troughton's where the bulk of missing episodes are, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, I believe so. They got rid of most of his.
For some reason, there's a lot of Hartnells that were saved, but Troughton's got trashed like no one's business.
Yeah.
And part of it was the BBC's policies. Part of it was Terry Nation trying to sell the Daleks as an American TV show, so he didn't care what happened to the old Dalek stories.
Although that did bring about the greatest villain of all time, and I will stand by my feelings on this. Stephen Moffat, bring back the Quarks. Bring them back. You don't need to use the Daleks ever again. Bring back the Quarks.
Okay, so here's the thing. I talk a lot of smack about Troughton, but he admittedly was really the creation of what the Doctor became, is his performance. I like Troughton. Troughton's good. I think you like Troughton too much
I like him because he became what the Doctor was. Right. I mean, that whole personality of, you know, pretending maybe that you don't exactly know what's going on all the time, but then turning around, you know, being the guy that has to save everything.
Well, it's funny because
before there was Columbo.
Well, you know, what's funny is that Troughton was more like the modern Doctor than, say, Pertwee was after him.
Mm. I can see that.
So, you know, anywho, so
to we have a letter.
We have a quote unquote letter. Now, as I stated several episodes ago, that if Vomit Hat Steve didn't write into the show by going to nerdandtie.trhonline.com and clicking on the comment form and filling it out, that until he wrote in, I would make up things that he wrote in. Now, we've offended a lot of people, including the South. Because honestly, fuck the South, Missouri especially this week.
Oh,
today we're gonna hate Missouri.
Did this last week too.
Maryville, Missouri needs to. The entire town needs to just die in a fire. If you don't know why, Google News it. It'll depress you. Anyways, this week he did not write into us again. So I am making up a letter.
Meaning I still don't believe in Canada, by the way.
Yes, he doesn't believe, we don't, Steve is real, Canada is real, but this letter is not. Dear Nerd and Ty, I'm happy to tell you that I have collected on CreateSpace my 24-chapter Pat Labor Ranma 1/2 crossover fanfic. In it, I have included the new main character, Moppet Hat Steve, who is a labor pilot who, when hit with cold water, turns into a chickadee. I wish for you all to tell your people about it, and all of Canada, if possible. Also, screw the South yet again. Love, Vomit Hat Steve. So there's your letter from Vomit
Hat Steve.
Thank you,
Vomit Hat Steve, for that letter.
Thanks, Vomit Hat Steve.
Vomit Hat Steve can be found on the staff of MTAC, the anime convention, and also he's got a new album dropping.
But, it is. It's going to be decent.
Yeah, because he's in a real band. It's not just him and a computer now.
So, with that, folks, we'd like to bid you all a wonderful evening, have a wonderful week, and we will see you again next time on Nerd and Tie.
All right, everybody.
He didn't say it!